Election 2000. You know, Election 2000 did one thing, did accomplish one thing, although the price was too high. It revealed for a moment the way in which the running of elections, the procedures, the on-the-ground, everyday procedures can be used to thwart and twist democratic rights. Americans, for a moment, learned that. The procedure was rife with manipulation from the use of these felony lists by your Secretary of State to the roadblocks, to the ballots that nobody could understand, to the distorted procedure of counting the ballots, and then finally, of course, the ultimate blow to the old ideal of democratic rights was the Supreme Court coup. And I think it has to be understood as a coup. Meanwhile, think about that election again in terms of the political parties and the way they conducted the election. That election was soaking in money. And the money was used to communicate with the voters through the mass media, through advertisements on the mass media. The levels of manipulation in election campaigns have risen. I don't need to tell you that. Just an example, you know, George W. Bush, can you hear me, by the way? If my voice fades, remind me. George W. Bush was the candidate for compassionate conservatism. At moments in his campaign, he even expressed heartfelt sympathy for poor single mothers trying to raise children on their own. That was the message he communicated to voters. He told them he would save Social Security. He would save Medicare. He would do something about prescription drug benefits for the aged. When he took office, he pushed through a tax cut which overwhelmingly benefited the very, very rich and is now trying to push through another tax cut which would do the same. He has presided over a government which is eviscerating the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act. Instead of saving Medicare, he is proposing to privatize Medicare, one of the most popular programs in the United States. You can't run against Medicare. You can only run by saying you're going to improve it. He's going to improve it by turning it over to HMOs. The most recent initiative by the Bush administration proposes to turn Medicaid, another very popular program which provides health care for 45 million poor and working poor people in the United States, he proposes to turn it over to the states in the form of a block grant, leaving the states free to cut coverage. In welfare, he proposes to make the restrictive law of 1996, and these changes are going to go through, more restrictive by requiring mothers to work 40 hours a week while on welfare and requiring that 70% of the people on the rolls be covered by that requirement, no matter that most of the people left on the rolls are the most disabled mothers. He is proposing to make much of welfare, much of our social welfare program, to turn them over to faith-based organizations. This is a sneaky maneuver. Not only will poor women have to go through these marriage promotion routines, even though there's nobody with a decent paycheck to marry. But it's a way of creating a new political machine in the heart of the most loyal Democratic constituency, the African American vote, because many of the churches that will get the money on those faith-based initiatives will be African American churches, who will now be, of course, tied to a conservative national administration. And most egregious of all, George W. Bush used first the war on terror and then the threatened war on Iraq to win the 2002 elections and maybe to win the 2004 elections. Can you imagine that? Threatening a conflagration which is so reckless in its possible reverberations to win an election. Well, overall, the democratic dream survives in the United States, but the American democratic reality is not very healthy. Not only have we undermined the right to vote with our procedural requirements, as revealed in Election 2000, we don't even make, think about this, we don't do what every other democratic country does. Election Day is a holiday. It's so simple. It's so clear, especially now with so many people working two jobs, that you've got to give people time to vote. Think about the working mother with two kids who puts in her 8 or 9 hour day. She's a lucky one because she's only working 8 or 9 hours. She has to take the kids to daycare first, pick them up afterwards, make sure there's something in the house for dinner, deal with the children's homework, and then she's got to go out and vote on the same day. Nobody does that. The United States does that, and we don't even think it's peculiar. Of course it's peculiar. Well, think about the peculiarities of the Electoral College and the way in which that contributed to the debacle of Election 2000. Nobody denies that Al Gore won the popular vote. Or think about the way in which the rules of the American electoral system restrict, limit, and ultimately destroy third-party efforts, both by making it so difficult for them to get on the ballot, but also because we have what is called single-member winner-take-all election districts. Now, probably this isn't the time for me to explain the technicalities of why this system overwhelmingly favors majority parties and destroys minor parties. Take it from me and from every political scientist who has paid attention to the issue, it does. We could change that with a procedure like instant runoff and give third parties a chance. We need third parties because third parties become the voice of people whose issues, whose identities have not yet had a chance to become a majority. How do you get dissent if you can't have third parties? But the American system makes third parties very, very difficult. So the American democratic reality, our procedures suppress democracy. The ever-growing influence of money on elections, and McCain-Feingold will not stop that, suppresses democracy. The ever more skilled and deceitful use of propaganda, the use of words to deceive people instead of to educate and illuminate the issues. This erodes democracy. You know, in the wake of the scandals of Florida, the way in which the counties ran the elections, your old-fashioned stupid machines, your inability to count the ballots, in the wake of that debacle, the Congress finally passed an election law, which is known by the name, the acronym, HAVA. That election law provides money to state and local officials to get new machines, to develop a statewide computer list of eligible voters so that the felony lists cannot be used the way they were used in election 2000. But it also creates an opening for state and local officials to introduce new requirements on voters, new kinds of voter identification that will be required before people can register and vote. They're giving, so it was a Janus-faced kind of bill. It seemed to be reform, but it also opened the door to again restrict the electorate, and to restrict it especially among working class minority and poor people. And that's why we're asking you to write Jeb Bush a postcard urging Florida officials not to take advantage of HAVA to make Florida elections even less democratic than they already are. So under these conditions, what is the hope for democratic reform? Because I told Ed and Muriel that I would talk about electoral reform. Well, I think that the secret, the key to moments of democratic reform in American history and in the American future rests with social movements, not people win an expansion of democratic rights, not when they follow the rules, the procedures that are laid down by political elites, but when they become a threatening force, when they threaten disorder in the streets, in the factories, and in the schools. One of the reasons that Americans won some democratic rights in the American Constitution was because there were social movements in the states of poor farmers who were protesting high taxes and high interest rates. The founders were afraid of those social movements. Or think about how almost a century later, the abolitionists finally forced the issue of emancipation on the American political agenda. I mean, the abolitionists were unpopular, they were a minority, they were disliked, but they were relentless. And they kept raising the issue, no matter the amount of conflict it created, not only in the South, but in the North. And they also created the Underground Railroad, which infuriated the South, because the Underground Railroad was leaching state, the slaves, a very valuable form of property from the South. The abolitionists won the constitutional right to vote for American minorities. That's what the Civil War accomplished, to say nothing of giving African Americans the rights of personhood. Or the labor movement in the 1930s, which helped to create, at least momentarily, a Democratic Party that tried to win elections by working with unions and speaking the issues of working people. Or the civil rights movement. You know, the civil rights movement didn't have any voters. They couldn't work for their issues through elections or through lobbying. Blacks didn't have the vote. That movement took to the streets. It threatened disorder in American cities. That's why it won. Each of these movements broke the grip for a moment of political elites on the American political discussion. And it did it by the conflict and the drama it created and the polarization it threatened in majority electoral coalitions. the very disruptions through which movements create drama, the threat to institutions, making streets impassable, shutting down factories, shutting down schools. These disruptions are also a mode of communication, a mode through which ordinary people can finally force their issues on the American political agenda. And that's when we get some reform, some democratic advances. So, although I would conclude that the state of democracy in the United States as a formal electoral representative system is sick, distorted, I think there's enormous reason at this moment for hope. Because I think we are on the cusp of a new period of social movements. I worried for a while that the global justice movement, the living wage movement, the sweatshop movement would all be suppressed by 9/11 and the war on terror and then the war on Iraq. But these movements have emerged again, stronger than ever, in the form now of an anti-war movement. A week or so ago, that movement brought out 10 million people across the globe. I don't think there's ever been an event of that kind. I have to tell you that in New York City, Mayor Bloomberg worked with the Bush Justice Department to fragment and divert the mass rally that was planned, so that New York City could not hold its own in the ranks of the people of the world who were making their voices heard for peace and accommodation. So it's a good time to be working for political reform and electoral reform, because people are moving again. Thank you.